Murfreesboro.
This is FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. Rutherford County's Place to Talk.
Hip hip hooray, let's give a cheer. It's 9 a.m., the signal's clear. Our favorite host is in the chair. The Truman Show is on the air.
It's the Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County.
The Truman Show is on the air. The Truman Show is on the air.
Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County. We're going to have a great show today, and I think we're going to tell you how to get out, enjoy yourself, relax, have fun, and maybe become a little bit more proficient in one of the toughest sports there is that was ever invented. And, of course, that's a four-letter word named golf. And I got Tracy Wilkins on today. And, Tracy, I was over at your place, what was it, about 3 weeks ago or something like that?
About 3 weeks.
And you have developed and are developing a new little golf course. And it's not like the normal golf course. And it's like maybe when you put your training shoes and you go out and start working out. It's to develop your skills and get you really interested in one of what Jack Nicholson said is the greatest game that ever invented.
That's right. It is, and I think the reason people think that or give it a try is because it's a game of with you against yourself and the golf course, and really not against other people. Even though a lot of people think that you're competing against others, but you know, ultimately, golf's just you against the golf course, and how you can learn to manage your emotions and learn how to play the golf course. And we like it so much just because that's a lot of life lessons in that too. Because things are going to come at you, and you know, how can you adjust?
The man that invented the game of golf had to have a distorted sense of humor.
Yeah, see, sick man.
Yeah,
I'm thinking somewhere along the line he was frustrated and went outside with a stick and started hitting something, and it probably hit a rock or something, and it just started rolling, and he went with that because it took his mind off of something else.
Yeah, and then he wanted to have everybody else join in his misery.
That's right. He was maybe the first doctor that came along. I got a psychologist. I can take your mind off your troubles. Take this stick and hit this rock.
It has to have a lot of science in it, and you're an expert in golf, but I have played. I started playing when I was probably about 18, I guess, and I've kind of gotten off center, and I've got to get back over and start playing again. But if you look at the shape of the golf clubs, and you're supposed to hit them where you want the ball to go. And the ball a lot of times will either go right or it'll go left, and sometimes it might go straight.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at how they're shaped, whether it be the driver where it's kind of a flat surface, and then you've got the irons where they're slanted surfaces, and just a small sweet spot to hit that ball. And I've watched the pros, and I always thought maybe cutting up under the ball and getting back away from it would be a better line for you to hit the ball. But what I've been watching for the pros, they hit it right on top, don't they?
Yeah.
Almost on top to drive it down, but it actually goes up.
Yeah, you're actually – there's physics involved in it. And the less loft you have on a club, like your driver versus your 7-iron, you'll notice that it curves left or right more so than your 7-iron. And that has to do with the loft of the club. Less loft, the more it'll curve right or left. But, you're trying to...
That's called a shank, right?
Well, we don't even say that word. that's a really bad word.
Yeah.
But, you're actually trying to hit down on iron shots, especially, and trap the ball between the club and the ground. And it's called compressing the golf ball. And that's what gives it the spring off the club, the shafts leading, and you haven't unloaded your power. Most people do try to scoop up under it and hit it to get it in the air, but that's why they lose all their power and they hit it offline so much. But compressing that ball against the ground and the spin, the aerodynamics of the dimples on the ball, the backspin, that's what makes a ball climb in the air. It doesn't need the help of flipping the hands at the bottom. And be honest with you, most people do that. They just have it in their mind, try to get it in the air.
Yeah, I don't ever remember golf being in any of the schools as far as part of the curriculum until, what, maybe the last 10 years or so?
Yeah, it's starting to sneak in a little bit, and it in different situations. I know they do it at I've gone over and helped them at Providence a time or two when they were trying to introduce it in some of the classes. But you kind of have to be careful with, you know, clubs and that many kids around and swinging and injuries and things. But there's a new program out called SNAG, Start New at Golf, and it uses plastic clubs, a lot larger head, tennis ball type things. And you can actually teach that program in the gyms. I went to Franklin to see them do it last year, and it's something that we hope we are able to maybe get into or be a part of or help introduce into the school system. We've talked with them a time or two, hadn't really had a big sit-down meeting yet to try to do that, but that's something I hope we get to do. I'd like to be able to sit down maybe with the physical education teachers and kind of introduce it to them and show them how to do it, because the kids look like they had a great time. They use Velcro targets, and it's something you can do in the gym, do it in the wintertime when they can't get outside maybe, and there's a method to it, and they just seem like they really had a big time. You start putting and chipping and hitting shots. I mean, it's not the real game totally, but it's an introduction, and that's all you're really trying to do is give kids an opportunity to see as many different sports as they can, and some filter more towards team sports, some filter more towards individual sports, and then others do other things, art and music and things like that. But we're just wanting to introduce it. If they like it, great. It's a sport of a lifetime, though. I mean, we got kids playing now over at Bloomfield that are 4 and 5 years old, and we have some that are playing over at Old Fort that are, I know, in their 90s. So it's not many sports you can do that with, and much less play with the younger kids and stuff and still be able to compete or enjoy the day and have a big time. So golf's pretty unique in a lot of different ways.
I think, to me, it could almost be a required subject in school, because what you said is actually true. It's a lifetime sport that you can enjoy, and actually it gives you a better feeling as far as no matter how old you get, you can still go out and, like you say, compete with yourself and be, and it's a social sport to go along with it. So it has a lot of attributes as far as what you can gain from the game of golf. And I've seen so many people that have actually become successful. I mean, we're not talking about going out and competing in the tournaments, the opens and things like that, but they become successful in their jobs and all other types, develop new friends.
Yeah. You don't even think sometimes about the health aspect of walking. 'Cause if you walk, just 9 holes of golf, if you just came out and played 9 holes if you just walked, if you hit them straight and everything went good, you'd still walk in about 2.5 miles. So you're going to walk over 3 miles easily if you're walking and playing golf. Of course, a lot of people use carts and stuff now. But, yeah, golf's a game that you can use it for a lifetime. Your skill level's going to change, go up and down. A lot of people get better as they get older because they start to figure out that it is a game and there is a strategy and there is a way to play golf holes. It's not just swing as hard as you can, go find it and hit it again. And you start to learn about that, and then hopefully you can apply some of that to life skills and the way that you maybe handle business or people that you run into. You're going to meet all kinds at the golf course, the good, the bad, and the ugly, just like you do and everything else. So it kind of gives, you hear some great success stories where people have met business partners on the golf course. They've actually golf has taught them how to maybe control their anger, mm-hmm. And or manipulate, or not manipulate, but handle situations differently. And they talk about how it helped them in business or life or marriage or whatever the case may be. So those are kind of cool stories. And that's what it does. Life throws a lot at you, and you have to be able to adjust daily. And on the golf course, there's not very many people that can tell you rounds that they've played that everything just went perfectly. So
I don't think there's anybody.
It's tough. It's somewhere along. Ben Hogan, I think, said one time he only expected to hit 7 shots around the way he intended.
Wow.
So he was pretty good on his misses, but only 7 shots around the way he intended to actually hit them.
So that tells you when you're just getting started and you're trying to learn the game of golf, don't expect too much when you get out there.
No,
but you're going to enjoy it anyway.
Well, I think so. I mean, it's a learning experience, and learning the game itself up front and how it's meant to be played a lot of times, well, almost always, helps a person more than just where they were introduced, where their buddy handed them a club and they just went to hitting balls and they formed a bunch of bad habits and they're hard to change. I mean, I just changed my grip the last week or so, where I'd gotten it over the years in a bad place, and I didn't move it very much. If I looked at it on camera, and I'm like, well, that's not very much, but it feels awful. But it's made a big difference in how things go. So just little tweaks and adjustments, and learning that about yourself a lot of times helps before you get in a bad way, and somebody else has to show you something.
And your body changes.
Oh, sure.
And that causes the swing to change. Mm-hmm. And I had a guy who was a kind of like a golf pro, and he was watching me swing one day, and he says, I can help you with your swing. And I had changed my grip, and it felt like I couldn't even swing the club with that grip.
I said,
I don't think I can do this. And he said, yeah, you go ahead and see what happens. I hit that ball I think I hit a 7-iron, and it was just as straight as a pin.
Yeah. It's those little adjustments that sometimes and one of the things I say when I'm teaching sometimes, I'm like, look, if you put a rock in your shoe, mm-hmm. it would feel awful. And you walk around with it long enough, it just gets, you don't think about it anymore. And if you took it out, you would notice, and you'd think it felt funny, but it's a whole lot better to have it out of there than it is to leave it in there. So sometimes we just get into some bad habits. We do it so long, it just starts to feel normal. I have different things in life the same way, eating habits or different things that we may do. If we go one way long enough, it just starts to feel normal, and it's tough maybe to go back, but going back, taking
talk
a step
about
back.
Eating habits.
Well, you said something about body changing, and you looked at me kind of funny. You looked at me kind of funny.
No,
so yeah,
no,
the body change. Yeah, and it does, and it puts it changes everything. Yeah. I mean, it changes. I mean, as we get older, our body changes. It stiffens up. We're not as flexible. Mm-hmm. It changes your timing. I mean, if your swing's shorter, changes your timing and changes a lot of things. And especially if you don't play for a while. You said you've laid off for a little while. So when you come back, your swing, you won't be in golf shape.
Yeah.
And a lot of times people don't think you have to be in very good shape to play golf. You can play it at any age, any shape. But flexibility, in my opinion, probably as big a deal as strength.
Is that why a lot of the older people hit the ball straight down the fairway with their golf clubs, but of course they don't go as far, but it seems like they're a little bit more accurate than the younger players? And I may be wrong.
Well, that's usually the case, but it's not necessarily because they it is a little bit because they got older, but sometimes you can't swing as hard. And one of the biggest issues with golf and people trying to control their golf ball, and that's what you're doing, mm-hmm. is they just overswing. I mean, it'd be like driving your car too fast. If you can't stop it with the car in front of you, you're out of control and you're going to have accidents. And in golf, people tend to overswing, out of balance, mm-hmm. out of rhythm, have a lot of accidents on the golf course. So,
four.
But, you know, as people get a little older, sometimes they're forced to gear down a little bit. They hit the ball a little straighter, and actually start to score better sometimes, because distance is not everything. It's big, but it's not everything.
Now, speed of the golf club. When you're trying to swing hard and just knock the ball just out of sight, are you speeding up the golf club, or are you just fighting it? Because I have seen a lot of that.
Very good, very good. Yeah, you're more fighting it.
Yeah.
You'll hear a lot of times somebody will say, well, I was in between clubs, so I tried to hit instead of a 7 or an 8, I went with a 7 and just swung it smooth and flew the green.
Mm-hmm.
And really what they did was they slowed down enough that everything worked properly and they hit it well. And a lot of times when people feel like they're swinging harder, all they're really feeling is a wasted energy before they ever get to the ball. Golf swing works off of a lever system in your wrist, mm-hmm. and you want to store power and let it release itself at the last second. Most people are over swinging from the top of the swing down to the ball and have used, you know, 10, 15, 20, 40% of their energy sometimes before they ever get to the ball. And that's why when sometimes you're teaching, they go, well, this doesn't seem like I'm swinging very hard, but the ball's going further.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're not maybe swinging as hard, but you're creating more energy. So kind of like, I have some weird examples sometimes. It's like having a power to your house, but you don't have a good connection. You could have a nuclear plant in your front yard. If it's not connected, it's not working. It won't run a light.
Yeah.
So a lot of times it's just wasted energy or a leak in your swing, whereas you can gear down and actually get more sometimes. Now, if you learn how to have really good technique and understand that and where power comes from, which is the core and the rotation of the body, just like in baseball,
mm-hmm.
That's where power comes from, and it's stored in the arms and hands. It's not created by the arms and hands, and that's what most people do. They really force a lot of power with their arms and hands and maybe upper body, and it's from the ground up.
You know, years ago, there were caddies all over the place when you go to a golf course. Now you never see caddies anymore. Is that because of the golf carts, the motorized golf carts that are there? And have they, in some ways, if you've got foursome that's walking and then you have the motorized golf carts, usually they're going to be faster than the people who are walking, from what I can see. And then you kind of have to let them play through or things like that. Are there actually caddies on any of the golf carts, courses anymore? I never see them.
Most of the time they're at private clubs, a lot of upper end clubs that you'll still find caddies or four caddies, but not necessarily walkers. A lot of times can play as fast or faster than people in carts because, which doesn't make any sense, I know, but if you'll watch
maybe
people.
They're better golfers.
Not really, but when golfers are walking, they tend to walk in four separate directions to their ball. And a bad habit people have in riding is if you and I are playing, we ride to your ball and hit, and even though mine's only over there 15 yards, I sit and watch you hit, and then you drive me over and I hit instead of us going separate directions. So the golf cart is it's a great revenue source, but it doesn't really speed up play a whole lot. It could if people used it properly, where they just kind of part between the two and go separate directions. But when they drive over there, if you hit it left and I ride with you, and then we go all the way to the right-hand side, the guys that are walking have caught up and hit and gone on. So cars hadn't really sped up the game at all. I mean, we still struggle. I'd say it's one of the biggest issues in golf still is, and maybe part of the reason we're struggling a little bit is because of the pace of play.
Yeah.
And people are slow in carts, just like they are walking sometimes. But a lot of times your walkers are – we have some that walk because they can keep up and they don't have to just sit around in their cart, because if you do it properly in a cart and go your separate ways, then you really play fast, and the other ones don't do it. Now you're really kind of waiting. So, but the caddy situation is kind of a neat idea. It's something we've even talked about trying to implement if we could get a program started. But a lot of that just goes back to the kids have to work or if I have to find a way. I mean, you hear a lot of those stories about people that caddy. It's because they, you know, they had to, or they had to find something to do. And
it's a great starting
job. And you don't even have to know how to play golf. You need to learn the etiquette and how to take care of the golf course and keep up and keep clubs clean and things like that. But you don't have to be a golfer to be able to do that. But it is a great learning tool also. And like I said, we've talked about it, but just having the personnel maybe to implement a program like that, I think it'd be great, because there are some kids out there that would be great at it. It's a great way to I even encourage the kids that I teach, even some of the college kids that we talk to that play on the team, that maybe caddy for each other during the summer. If they go to a tournament, one of them made a match play and the other one didn't, they'll caddy for each other. And inevitably, they'll tell you that they learned a lot caddying, because they're watching somebody else either make mistakes or help talk them through that. So caddying's it's a lost art, but it's still out there and in different situations. And there's a difference between being a caddy and a bag toter. I mean, I worked in Memphis before I came here back in the early 80s, and we probably had 50 or 60 caddies at the club that I worked at.
Wow.
I say caddies. We had about 50 or 60 fellas that worked as caddies. We probably had about 10 caddies and 40 or 50 bag toters. So there's an art to it, and there's the reason the guys on tour switch every now and then. There's personality conflicts and things. You have to be able to get along. I mean, you're a pretty close relationship when you have a caddy like that too over time.
The caddy, I mean, if you could get caddies, say, at Old Fort Golf, and Bloomfield. Of course, you won't need one in Bloomfield.
Right.
But if you had it at Old Fort Park, and you had people who knew the game of golf, knew the swings and things like that, wouldn't that be a great asset for, say, the average player when he gets out and things go wrong, to have somebody that can actually school him while he's out playing?
Yeah, you're right on it, because one of the biggest assets of those guys that on tour and the girls that play on tour, that the caddies a lot of time have to keep them under control or help them to make decisions. They also have to not be confrontational and not be right, because ultimately the decision comes down to the player. Because you'll see Bubba Watson's a good one. He always, if he messes up, he kind of turns to his caddy and blames it on him. And he's not really doing that, but it's a deflection of how those guys, they don't own into things. It's like Nicholas said, he never missed a putt. Some didn't go in, but it never was their fault. Mm-hmm. And that's they talk about that being the sign of a champion athlete, is they did it the way they meant to. Something else caused it to go wrong. That keeps them from getting negative things. But sometimes you'll see those relationships break up too, because the caddy either doesn't benefit that player in that way, or he makes it a little worse sometimes, or the caddy takes too much control and wants to convince the player to do something. So, and then in certain situations, at the end of a tournament, a young player, adrenaline starts pumping, sometimes a good caddy has to step in and help control those situations a little bit. It's a really fine line. It is really a lost art, especially at the local level. Even on tour, they have struggles, you know, finding people that can really, really do the caddy job. And a lot of times you'll see players try to become caddies. Sometimes they make good ones. Sometimes they think they know more than the guy they're caddying for, and that's never a good sign.
Well, we remember a situation, a couple of years ago, when Tiger Woods fired his caddy that he had for a long time, and it looked like they were the best buddies that ever were. And then all of a sudden, everything just broke apart, and it ended up on the airways that they were fighting among themselves. And I had never seen that in golf before, and it was just a strange situation.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot going on at that time with Tiger and his personal relationships and things, and you never really know the whole story, but the Stevie Williams that was caddying for him, he's a really good caddy. Obviously, everybody wanted him, but strong ego and personality himself, so I'm sure eventually
two of them mixing.
Eventually, there was going to be some clashing going on. But he's obviously good at what he does and knows what he's doing. But every now and then, they just kind of step out of line, and somebody's the boss and somebody gets let go, and it's usually the caddy. Every now and then the caddy walks off, but that was just one of those strong personality ego things, certain, you know, perfect storm type of things, different things going on. And
well, it makes golf interesting.
Sure it does. It all the TVs and everything, they loved it. Give them something to talk about.
Oh, gosh, yes. And we want to let you know that this part of the show is brought to you by Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat. Did you know that 7 out of 10 Americans suffer a hearing loss after the age of 50? Now there is a way to restore your hearing, and you need to give Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat a call today. Middle Tennessee Ear, Nose, and Throat has been Rutherford County's trusted provider of taking care of all the coughing, sneezing, stuffed-up feelings for almost two decades. Their team of caring physicians, audiologists, nurses, and administrators are standing ready for you and your family so you can improve your style of healthy living. They also have a mobile hearing unit that will actually come to your home, diagnose, and fit you with a hearing device right in the comfort of your living room. Call 848-9265. That's 848-9265.
Brought to you by Radio Shack. At Radio Shack's Freedom Day sale, get a memory card and a portable power bank for free when you purchase in-store a Samsung Galaxy S5 Zero Down. Offer good through July 24th, 2014. You can get non-medical care at home for you and your loved one. Just visit athomecaretn.com.
My name is Cheryl Bradley, and I've been with At Home Care for 4 years. I'm the Director of Care Coordination. And one of the things that we do here at Home Care is we take the time to get to know our clients and match them with one of our home care aides. And we have 120-plus home care aides, so we try to make sure the personalities and the type of services are matched properly.
Here's Melissa Warren with At Home Care.
The one thing that I think really sets At Home Care apart is that we understand we may not be the answer for everyone that phones us, but our goal is to help everyone that phones us, give them direction, give them information, maybe lead them to where they do need to call to get the help they need.
That's athomecaretn.com.
Do you miss that old-time feel of a real haircut? The kind where they shave your neck with a razor? I still offer that. This is Pat Briley with Pat's Family Hair Care on Baird Lane near MTSU. I offer a family environment. With every haircut, you get a free shampoo. I also do perms, eyebrow waxing, colors, and more. If you need an early morning, late afternoon, or a Sunday appointment, call 904-4019. That's 904-4019. I look forward to working with you today. Call 904-4019.
This is Bill Kennedy, and I'm running for the Constitutional Office of Sheriff of Rutherford County. I am asking for your vote on August the 7th. Coach Boots Donnelly brought me to MTSU to play football. I was recruited by Sheriff Truman Jones, where I spent 19 of my 23 years in law enforcement. Today, Donnelly, Jones, and Republican candidate for Sheriff Bob Asbury endorsed me. I am a graduate of the FBI National Academy. I have a Bachelor of Science degree in Education and a Master's degree in Public Service Administration. I care about our community, families, and especially our kids. I will bring accountability, integrity, and intelligence back to the Sheriff's Office.
Paid for by Bill Kennedy for Sheriff Janet Engel, Treasurer.
Premier Six Theater on Broad and Jackson Heights, showing all of your favorite movies. Call their hotline, 896-4100, or goseeamovie.com. Popcorn pop fresh daily. Their movie hotline, 896-4100, or goseeamovie.com. Premier Six on Broad and Jackson Heights.
Get out of the house. Turn off the computers, the cell phones, and video games. It's time to create some family memories with your mom, dad, your children, or your spouse. Maybe just spend some quality time with your friends. I'm Randy Boland, Murfreesboro Outdoors, on Northwest Broad Street between Highway 840 and Thompson Lane. Me and my staff treat people the way we would like to be treated when shopping for fishing, hunting, or shooting supplies. Murfreesboro Outdoors, open Monday through Saturday from 9 to 6 on Northwest Broad Street. I'm Randy Boland. Now, turn off the computers and go hunting or fishing.
If you want to get some barbecue, I tell you how to do it. Head for the Slick Pig and you're into it. Just walk through the door at 1920 East Main and your nose will send a message right to your brain.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the catfish special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock, $9.99 plus tax for all-you-can-eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw at Slick Pig Barbecue.
This is Lisa Duke-Crowell. I am your Rutherford County Clerk. I am running for re-election, and I would appreciate your vote. I have made many positive changes at the county clerk's office since I took office in 2010. I would love to continue serving the citizens of Rutherford County. Early voting begins July the 18th through August the 2nd. Election day is August the 7th. I hope to see you at the polls. I am asking for your vote.
Paid for by Lisa Duke Kroll for Rutherford County Clerk, Jeff Kroll, Treasurer.
This is Lisa Duke Kroll, and I approve this message.
Hey, you know the game Uno?
Yeah, I love that game.
Now it's a Tennessee Lottery instant game.
I like the wild card.
Yeah, me too.
When I play it, I love to yell, wild!
Ah, why would you do that?
I don't know. I just like saying wild!
Okay.
So what can you win?
Up to $20,000.
Know what I'd do with $20,000? I'd go wild.
Go wild with the new Uno instant game from the Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun. And don't forget, enter your tickets in the VIP player suite to earn points toward the cool things you love.
Could I see this one?
Sure. Diamond Sevens, girl's best friend.
Okay, what's this?
That's $100,000 richer. Perfect on you.
What's this one here?
$1,000 bankroll. Very subtle, very nice.
Ooh, what about this one?
That one? Summer Jumbo Bucks. Everybody loves that one.
I'll take them all.
Which Tennessee Lottery instant game fits you best? Try one on for size and you could walk away looking like a winner. The Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun.
The Truman Show on FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, and WGNSradio.com. We're Rutherford County's place to talk.
And welcome back with Tracy Wilkins. And we're going to talk about, in a few minutes, how to improve your golf game all the way around. And everybody that's listening, I don't care if you're 6 or 7 years old, or if you're 85 and 90 years old, it is the best game in the world to go out and enjoy life and forget all your problems. Just create the new problem of going out there and trying to develop your skills. And actually, it's not really a problem. It's really a fun process. And we want to let you know that this part of Tracy's show is brought to you by Metal Max Roofing and Siding, located at 900 Captain Joe Fulgham Drive, and that's just off Middle Tennessee Boulevard right here in Murfreesboro. Steel is a unique material that can be recycled, conserving energy and natural resources. Steel is also an excellent cost-effective alternative to asphalt shingle roofs. Metal roofs are beautiful, resistant to wind damage, roof rust, and some are less expensive than asphalt shingles. They offer factory direct pricing so you can buy your roofing and siding materials straight from the manufacturer without the middleman. Go by and see their friendly staff today and let them show you over 20 different colors of Metal Max Roofing and Siding. Give them a call today at 494-1693. That's 494-1693. Pull them up on the website, www.metalmaxllc.com. All right, Tracy. Men do not want to admit that they're getting older, that they've lost some of their skills, and they feel like that they can probably beat every lady out on the golf course. And the truth of the matter that none of that's right, is it?
Not even close.
Yeah.
There's some of them that feel that way. Mm-hmm. Just come on out. I got a couple of ladies that I'll let you play with, and we'll see how you feel when you get finished. But, one of the things we were talking about a little bit off air was where people play and what set of tees that they play from. And that has been probably one of the biggest misconceptions in golf. Everybody thinks the most forward tee is the ladies' tee, and then you move back to the senior tee, which nobody can even agree on what age that is. And then you got the regular tee and a championship tee or whatever. And that's just not the case. Tees are set up at different yardages to help people to pick a set of tees that matches basically how far they can hit their tee shot on a regular basis. And it doesn't matter if you're 55 years old and hit it 270, or 25 years old and don't hit it but 220, the younger fella doesn't need to be playing further back. It doesn't have to do with gender or age or anything. The girls that come out and play from the college, young ladies, they come out and play at the college, they play from the white tee markers, which are the middle tees, mm-hmm. at Old Ford. And if they played all the way up on the, quote, ladies' tees because they're female, it just wouldn't be a challenge. So we have had some success on encouraging. There's a program out now that's being pushed by USGA, PGA, a lot of the ones called Tee It Forward. And getting people to play forward at least one set of tees just a time or two to see how they enjoy the game. And that's what we're trying to get people to enjoy it. You do not walk in the golf shop and we say, you're a 40-year-old male, so you play from here. Mm-hmm. Or you're a 35-year-old female, you play from... It just doesn't work that way. People have got it in their head that way. But that's just not the way it's supposed to work, because we have the talent level, what you shoot may have a little bit to do with it, but you don't put a 10-year-old kid on the back tees because he's a male. Mm-hmm. You just don't do that. You want it to be fun. You want them to grow. So we encourage people, and we have a chart, and the USGA and PGA and Golf Foundation, all of them have worked together, and they come up with, if you hit the ball between this distance, we encourage you to play from a total yardage of this. Mm-hmm. And like our forward tee at Old Forge, green. Most people think red when they think ladies tee.
Right.
We changed the colors to kind of mess everybody up, not know where to play, so they could ask questions. We can encourage them where to play from. Mm-hmm. So it makes the game so much more fun. I mean, everybody thinks, well, you're a golf professional. You've been one for a long time. Why aren't you playing from the tips back here? Well, it ain't any fun anymore. Yeah. I can't hit it far enough. So I've moved up a set, and sometimes I play with guys, I move up all the way to the white tees. And I'm telling you, I have a lot more fun up there making birdies and pars, even when maybe I don't play as well. Mm. When you move back, your skill level should be a little bit higher, and I'm not playing as much now, so mine's dropped off some. And doesn't mean I can't play from back there, but it's a lot more enjoyable for me to move up. And I encourage everybody to just try it a time or two. I play with our ladies league every year once a during their
you
league.
Don't have to wear anything special.
Don't have to wear anything special, but they always like me to play up from where they play from, wherever that might be. Mm-hmm. And it changes the golf course completely. Mm-hmm. I mean, you think about it, well, that's way short. That would be easier. Well, it brings a totally different hazards and different things into play. So it changes how you think and how you see things. So
it's a game of consistency, isn't it? Every time you swing, you have to be on your best. If you don't, then everything goes awry.
Well, you don't have to be on your best. The key is for consistency. You can't perform at anything at your best all the time. You can't be the best at leading this radio show and conversation every time. Not every time. But you can be consistent.
So that's why everybody's getting me when I get off the collar me and tell me what all I did wrong.
Well,
right?
Usually, see, that's when you've had a big dip in performance. But consistency is where you just don't want the bad dips. You want to be able to control your golf ball to a point that you keep it in play. And that's always not going to be in the center of the fairway. You may even hit it in the short rough every now and then, but you just don't want to hit it out of bounds, or you don't want to hit it in the water, or you want to learn to avoid the things that are really out there to penalize you. Mm-hmm. More life lesson stuff in that. But basically, you want to learn to hitting the golf ball is not hitting it at the hole every time. It's hitting it to where you can to make the best score at that point. You may hit it over in the rough, have to chip out and make a bogey. Bogey's not a bad score if you'd have been dumb and made a triple. Mm-hmm. You'd wished you'd had a bogey. So
even the pros do it.
Oh, sure they do. You hardly ever hear somebody playing a bogey-free round, mm-hmm. Especially two in a row.
Yeah.
So consistency is, of course, you can be consistently bad. Golf's a game of good misses, not good shots. Mm-hmm. Like I said, Hogan only hit seven like he intended, but his misses were better than most.
Yeah.
So every shot's somewhat of a mishit. Otherwise, he'd go in the hole every time. So how well can you manage your shots?
And course management.
Course management is the whole deal. I was talking earlier about, I helped a guy that works with us over there. We knocked 4 to 5 shots off his handicap. Never talked to him about swing or golf lesson or how to hit a golf ball. We just sat down one day and I explained I learned from him what holes on the golf course gave him trouble, and then gave him a different way to go about playing them. Mm-hmm. And he knocked 4 to 5 shots off his handicap just through strategy talk, not a golf lesson on how to hit it.
Now, handicap, that's something that a lot of people don't understand. How do you get a handicap, and how do you reach that? You got a handicap 6 or a handicap 7, and then a lot of times you'll see those people, say, at a special golf tournament, like Bob Hope's out in California.
Right, well, they have the pro-ams and stuff.
Yeah, and you see a guy with a 7 handicap.
Mm-hmm.
How does he reach that 7 handicap?
Well, you record your scores at the course that you most normally play at, but you can record them from any course that's rated. Mm-hmm. They come out and do a course rating, and they're rated different from different sets of tees. But the actual rating is set if a scratch golfer or a 0 handicap was playing that. So they have a system. And there's 10 items that are ranked on every hole. So it's a pretty complex formula. Mm-hmm. And then as you post your scores, most people think your handicap is your average, and it is not. It's actually your potential.
Mm.
And like if you post 20 scores, they only count the best 10, so they throw the worst 10 out, and then out of those 10, there's an average, and then it's a percentage of that. Mm-hmm. So you shouldn't really be able to shoot your handicap very often, especially in tournaments. But it, basically, it says if I'm a 0 handicap and you're a 7, when we go out, the 18 holes are ranked 1 through 18 in difficulty, mm-hmm. and on those holes, if we were playing a match, which is what makes it competitive, on the 7 hardest holes, I would have to give you a stroke. Hmm. So we could have a fair match. I mean, right. I could go play against Tiger Woods on the strokes that he would give me, and we could have a fair competition. Mm-hmm. Or you could play with somebody that, you know, shoots 100 and have a fair competition just because of the handicapping system. Now, the handicapping system is only as good as the people that are putting their scores in. I mean, you have people that sometimes only put their
honor system.
Yes. So some people put only their high scores in, so theirs is lean the other way. And we have some people that what they call sandbag the other way. They only put their good scores in because it makes them look better than they really are. Mm-hmm. But when they get in an event and compete, they're really not getting enough strokes sometimes because they. So all that they ask you to do is put your whatever you shoot, that's what you put in. And they have what they call equitable stroke control. So if I'm a 0 handicap, but I just go out there and lose my mind on one hole and make a 10, I don't get to count the 10. It has to drop back to a certain score because that's what I would normally make, say a 6. So if I shot 78, I'd have to knock 4 shots off that and post a 74 because that was more realistic to my – and that's what makes it fair. That's why a 10-year-old, a 30-year-old, a 50-year-old, no matter what handicap, a 0 to a 36 handicap, you can go out and play and compete on a daily basis, and it's fair if your handicap's correct.
Well, I have played with a lot of honest people over the years, and I have observed many times that we were talking about winter roos before we went on the air, where if anybody saw the movie Caddyshack, of course, one of them was playing by winter roos. And basically what that means is if he's in the rough or behind a tree or whatever, he would just kick the ball a little bit and it'd end up more in the fairway than what it should have been. And it's an amazing game because I can remember a couple of the guys that I was playing with, they had a little wager going on. And every once in a while, you would count the strokes of what they were doing and listen to them. And by the time we got to the 18th, when they were supposed to settle up, we almost had to separate them. They almost went to blows. It was a situation where it was really more comical than it was anything. Yeah.
People have a memory loss sometimes on the golf course. But that's why golf's meant to be played where you don't touch the golf ball at all. And winter rules really aren't kicking the ball out behind a tree or getting it out of the rough. That's just out-and-out cheating is what that is.
Well, of course.
Winter rules they came up with basically because of course conditions sometimes in the winter when the grass goes dormant and mm-hmm. you may have not as good a turf to play off of where you can improve your lie a certain amount just to be able to hit a ball. But in reality, you try not to play that way at any time of the year. Golf's just meant to be played. You hit it, and wherever it is, you hit it again unless you have to take a penalty or some sort. Mm-hmm. That's why you'll see white circles and stuff on the ground in different places where they mark, say, ground under par. So mm-hmm. if there's a rough area, they can mark it where you get a legal drop. But otherwise, it's like hitting it in a divot in the middle of the fairway. Most people are going to move it out of that, but the rules of golf say you're supposed to hit it. That's why it's good for people to repair ball marks, repair divots and things properly, so that it's well for the next person behind them. Back in the day, they didn't even rake bunkers. They didn't even have rakes in bunkers. You hit it in there, you kind of kicked it around with your foot, and you were done. So it was really a hazard. Now you see on TV and things, all the bunkers are perfect, and they don't really have trouble with them. So they're not really hazards as much anymore. So
Nicholson seems to hit it closer off of the bunkers than he does anywhere else. Well, unbelievable.
They call him the magician, but if you'll ever notice, he's in that position a lot more than other folks, too. Yeah. If he'd learn to control his other shots better, he'd be better off.
Oh, me. It is so funny. And I was one of the things that you see in golf, it's so precise, everything is. And I have seen people lose strokes because maybe they were getting ready to hit a shot, and for some reason the grass or whatever around them moved the ball.
Mm-hmm.
If the ball just moved just a little bit when you're not going to hit. And I never have understood that because there's so many things that – are there any rules that would say because of the way it was seated and everything that – he should not be penalized a stroke or whatever, because
if the ball moves after you have addressed it and grounded your golf club, this is outside of a hazard.
Yeah.
If you've taken your stance, addressed the ball and grounded your club, and if the ball moves, you are deemed to have made it move whether you actually did or not, and you have to replace it, and there's a stroke penalty. Mm-hmm. Now, if you haven't, that happened to Nicholas a long, long time ago. And if you'll notice, after that point, he quit grounding his golf club. So that way, if the ball ever moved, he had never grounded his golf club. Hmm. So he never was deemed to have made it move. But there are different ways. If you move a twig or a leaf or something within a club length of your ball, and then your ball moves, you're deemed to have made it move. So a lot of different things. They've changed that rule a little bit where if wind causes the ball to move, like on a green, sometimes they get them so fast, mm-hmm. that they've actually had to cancel play before because the wind would blow balls around. But a couple of years ago, if that happened, it was a penalty if you had addressed the ball. Now, if the wind is deemed to have made it move on a green, then it's not a penalty under certain situations, but they get kind of complicated. And then when it moves like that, you have to play it from wherever it goes. If it rolls in the hole, you get it in the hole. If it rolls in the lake, you got to play it like it went in the lake. So there's a lot of different rules. They can get a little complicated sometimes, but basically hit it wherever you find it, hit it again. If the rules allow you to take a drop, whether it's with a penalty or without, then do so. Kind of always been amazing to me. It's hard for anybody to know all the rules. Mm-hmm. It's amazing to me how many people play a game that don't know the most basic of rules. I mean, I can't imagine playing checkers or Monopoly or whatever and not knowing the rules at all, just doing whatever you wanted to do. But that's sometimes why people don't understand what's going on TV a lot of times too.
Now, is that part of what you're doing over, was it Bloomfields?
The short course.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Yeah, tell me a little bit about that, because it's as much an educational process as it is a fun thing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a unique situation that the city of Murfreesboro has that a lot of places don't have, just a short, small course for people to get their feet wet and learn, whatever age. Obviously, it's mostly younger folks because that's when they're taking up the game. But we're trying to use it as to make it a totally different approach to golf, where it's a lot more laid back, a little more fun. And if you want it to just be fun, it can be that. If you want to get into competition as you get older, then we'll kind of guide you in that direction. But we've had one of our a couple of our juniors paint on some rocks that we've put on every hole by the tee, the nine core values of the first tee: honesty, integrity, responsibility, and sportsmanship, all those types of things that they just kind of can see and be out there and what golf's all about. So you want to teach golf, introduce a game, but it's way more important that we teach them those types of life skills and core values that make them better citizens and human beings along the way. And at the same time, how to compete, mm-hmm. and that there is a winner and a loser. I'm not a big fan of everybody shows up and gets a prize. I mean, I do think you need to be encouraging. You need to help folks along to get better, but everybody can't be the best. Somebody is, but that doesn't mean that's what makes people with some heart and some guts strive to be better. If everybody's going to get the same reward, no matter what level, what's the use of trying any harder? So I think we kind of got that one a little off a little bit. So we're very encouraging. That's what we want to be. We want to encourage how to work harder, how to get better, and how to go about trying to become the best that each person can be, not necessarily the best one that's ever been. Now, if that happens, that's great. But basically just trying to get them to be the best that they can be, whether it's at golf or at running a business or being a 10-year-old, making their bed, cleaning their room, whatever the case may be. More along those type of lines of what we're trying to do and encourage there. And at the same time, golf is just our vehicle to be able to try to teach these types of things. And that's what they're doing across the country with golf. I hope my peers are doing that with golf professionals around the country. That's kind of, it's just our vehicle to be able to try to teach and to make better citizens and people at what they're doing. That's why golf, I mean, you call your own penalties on yourself. Honesty and integrity and respect for yourself, for the other players, for the golf course, all those types of things are things that we're trying to teach and encourage those young ones to grab a hold of, and not just the competitive side, but yet teach them also that the competitive side is what makes you strive and drive harder to become better.
If you want to get better at golf, you have to listen, don't you? You have to listen to everything that has been given to you in an educational process. And that's what you're doing right now with Bloomfield. You're giving the young people an opportunity to get started in the right way. And unfortunately, a lot of people, many of us, we just picked up clubs, headed out for the golf course and started hitting. I mean, we never learned. We never had our golf clubs fitted or anything like that. It was just, we were just pretty raw, you might say.
Right.
And now you've got it set up where you can get them earlier and then maybe get them used to going and getting with an expert or whatever and keeping their game as competitive as possible, because that's when it really, really gets fun, is when you can go out there and shoot those great scores.
When you just start seeing improvement and you start seeing yourself get better, then that's some self-encouragement,
right.
and that kind of propels you on to want to do more, to see how far you can reach. And it's the exact same thing with the life things that we keep talking about. Once you see yourself grow, get smarter in school, and start to progress through, and you start finding your skill sets, and you start honing those in a little better, you start getting encouraged, and you start having some direction on which way to go. Some people are going to be directed in golf to recreational golf. Some are going to be directed, they know it can help their business. Some are going to be directed to competition and see how far they can take themselves. I mean, it's a great way to, if you're good enough, to be able to pay for some schooling and some education and things that are really going to help you for years to come. Because the golf thing, at some point, Sam Snead wasn't able to compete anymore, but he was awfully good. So that's kind of more of the direction of what we're talking to. And again, it's just a vehicle to be able to teach that. And it's a pretty nice vehicle. I've ridden in it a long time, and I really enjoy it. And just a give back type of thing. I mean, I started when I was really young, and people kind of helped teach me the right way. And I just kind of want to do that and give it back some. And this is just an unbelievable opportunity with this little course to be able to do that.
You've got a great job. You have done a great job over there.
Well, thank you.
And you have a good board to work with. And Murfreesboro is committed to excellence. And you have it over there at Old Fort. And you've done so well. I mean, you can go over there, and there's not a better golf course anywhere because of the way that you have committed to the process of having the best for the people that get out there. It's not easy to run a golf course, is it? There are so many variables with it.
There's a lot going on, and it's 20. They may not think it, but it's 24/7, 365. I mean, things are going on at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning sometimes that you have to go out and take care of, and we're only closed 3 days a year. So it's, and everybody expects it to be at its best each day that they come out there. And it takes a big team to do that. And Joel Beckham, our superintendent, and his staff, Marty McCurry, the golf head golf pro, and the guys that work under him. I mean, it's a daily grind, and they do an outstanding job. And like this winter, we had some adverse conditions with the winter and a lot of the golf courses, but Joel and his staff have bounced back and just done an outstanding job. Golf course is in great shape and just been blessed, like you said, with a board and a good staff over the years, and just lucky to be in the position I'm in.
And it's perfect weather around here. If you want to play when it's really nice in the spring and in the fall and when the heat comes, and then when the winter, you get to learn how to play golf here in all types of conditions.
You get it all.
Yeah.
You get it all.
Tracy, I've enjoyed it. I always enjoy talking to you.
Thank
you're
you.
A lot of fun.
I
Tracy Wilkins. And when you go over to Old Fort, you'll see him over there at the golf club. And some of you may want to take your kids or grandkids over to Bloomfields. Just go over to the golf club there at Old Fort, and they will direct you where you need to go as far as that's concerned. So go out and have a good round of golf today. We'll see you in the morning at 9.